Have you found anything helpful at all? He made a vague gesture of denial.
Nothing, aside from what I have told you.
However, there is a book that other volumes refer to as the Authority on the Thrones and their Curses. I was certain it was here in the King's Library. Have you seen The Creation of the Thrones by Pernilius the Wise?
I couldn't help chuckling. Pernilius? I think I'd remember such a ridiculous name. Ask Mirella. She shares your passions for putrefied history. Or is it petrified? Perhaps both.
It's also very, very old.
My teasing grin earned one of his signature scathing glances.
I have asked her, of course. She has not seen it. It must have been lost. Or perhaps Rasmus had it burned.
My hopes for a quick answer died a quick death.
If only Sage would appear and give us instruction, I mused.
The last time I'd seen her was the moment I'd destroyed the Frost Throne. She'd been frustratingly silent since. In darker moments, I worried the visions of the Minax were a sign that my connection with Sage had been severed.
That would be very helpful, Brother Thistle agreed. Until then, we continue our research.
What should I read tonight, then? I asked, shaking off the dismal thoughts, since I've been so cruelly denied the wisdom of Pernilius. He tapped a book with a red cover.
This one.
I took the book to a table and opened it, scanning for some mention of the thrones until the words swam before my eyes. Hours later, I had found nothing of use, and I still couldn't stop thinking about Brother Thistle's revelation. Only a Minax could destroy another Minax. And the other Minax was in the land of Firebloods.
Chapter 3 For Firebloods, autumn meant a period of weakening and loss, when an attentive summer sun turns fickle, playing a coquettish game of hide-and-seek until winter falls over the land with all the subtlety of a blacksmith's hammer. Thus, when the equinox dawned cloudless and bright, I had no urge to celebrate the day, least of all by attending a ball full of high-born strangers who would sneer and whisper about me behind their hands. If Arcus hadn't expressly asked me to go, I would have found some excuse to stay in my room reading.
"You're brooding again, my lady," said Dorina, laying a chemise, petticoats, corset, and silk stockings onto a chair. "You'll give yourself frown marks."
"Tempus forfend.
What will the court say if I'm wrinkled as well as dangerous?" She smirked.
"They will say you make a very severe queen."
"Dorina," I gave her a narrow-eyed look, "please stop saying things like that."
"But it will happen. Someday.
When volcanoes erupt with snow."
She lifted her sharp little chin. "Everyone in the servants' hall talks about how much the king moons over you."
"Hmm. And what exactly do they say?"
Despite myself, I felt a flicker of hope that they might be supportive.
She paused.
"Opinions vary."
The flicker of hope died.
"That's your delicate way of saying that no one is happy about it."
"Some are."
I gave her a knowing look.
"You?"
"Well, yes."
I had to laugh at her apologetic expression.
"Don't worry, Dorina. You're worth 10 supporters. With you on my side, I can conquer kingdoms."
Her lips curved shyly.
"Or at least one king." By the time I stood in the doorway of the ballroom, most of my bravado had fled. I'd faced trained killers in King Grasmus's arena, with an entire crowd howling for my blood. But somehow the thought of all these eyes on me, the hum of murmured hatred buzzing in my ears, was threatening in its own right. I might not end up bloody on the floor, but I wouldn't escape unscathed.
Mirella had outdone herself decorating the ballroom. The icy pillars had been carved with elaborate designs, and the chandeliers wept with hundreds of icicles that managed to look elegant and dangerous at the same time. Thick velvet curtains in rich jewel tones framed soaring windows. Rectangular wooden tables groaned under silver platters laden with savory appetizers and frosted cakes.
"Lady Ruby Atrera," a man announced in ringing tones.
All eyes turned to me, some curious, others openly hostile. I searched for a familiar face, feeling a pulse of relief when I spotted Mirella moving toward me. She wore an emerald ball gown that complemented her porcelain skin. Gold lacing crisscrossed the bodice, and gold sunbursts edged her wrists and hem.
"Ruby," she said warmly, "don't you look lovely? Turn around so I can see the back."
I did a quick twirl. For once, the seamstress had shown restraint. There were no ruffles on the deep red dress, just a simple square-necked bodice that hugged my waist before flaring into a full skirt covered with a layer of red tulle. Dorina had asked the gardener for a crimson lily, which she'd pinned onto my ebony hair.
"So do you," I replied. "That colour suits you."
"All colours suit me," Mirella replied, her grin irreverent. A jowly middle-aged nobleman approached, raising a goblet of wine in greeting before bowing deeply to Mirella.
"My dear Lady Mirella, why don't you introduce me?"
She inclined her head. "Lord Prospero, this is Lady Ruby." My brows drew together. I was no lady. I wish they wouldn't try so hard to pass me off as one. Rather than bowing, Lord Prospero merely inclined his head.
"So, you are the Fireblood of such renown. How kind of the king to show you such hospitality."
His eyes swept me up and down. "Charming." It wasn't lost on me that he kept a few feet of distance between us. I performed a quick mental check, making sure my body temperature was close to normal, at least for me. Nerves made my gift harder to control, and the last thing I wanted was to embarrass Arcus in front of his guests, or worse, hurt his chances of getting the court and the dignitaries to sign the peace accords. I needed them all to see that I wasn't a threat, that I was about as volatile as cooled porridge, that peace was possible and Firebloods were not to be feared. Much as it irked me to admit it, even just to myself, part of me craved the court's approval. The nobleman turned his attention back to Mirella.
"What a divine job you've done with the ballroom. The pride of the kingdom, I dare say. You show the indisputable beauty and power of frost."
His eyes met mine in something like challenge.
"Mirella is very talented," I agreed neutrally.
"But surely must acknowledge the strength of ice," he said. "You can build an entire castle from it."
He gestured to the pillars.
"The original castle is made from stone," I pointed out.
He gave me a pitying look as if I'd said something embarrassingly naive.
"The newer additions are made of pure ice."
I'm afraid I tend to avoid those wings. I tried to relax my tense jaw while scanning the crowd for one of the footmen bearing trays of ice wine. At least if I were holding a glass, I'd have a reason not to grab Lord Paunch by the collar and ask him what he thought of the power of fire. One of the footmen caught my eye, mostly because he was openly staring at me, then snapped his head forward. Something about his thick blonde hair and the square shape of his face seemed familiar. But Lord Prospero interrupted my thoughts with a dismissive laugh.
"Well, of course you do. You'd end up soaked to the skin from all that melted ice. I imagine your kind doesn't like to get wet. In fact, I've heard Firebloods avoid bathing more than absolutely necessary."
I heard Morella's indrawn breath.
"Do not react. Do not let him win."
He smirked.
"Or perhaps that's true of peasants in general."
His contemptuous drawl snapped the last thread of my patience. I took a step closer.
"Actually, I love baths, provided they're nice and hot."
I curled my hand in front of his face, allowing a searing flame to leap up in my palm. Like all Tempesian aristocrats, he was a Frostblood, but I didn't think he was a very powerful one. His cold didn't permeate the air the way Arcus's or Brother Thistle's did. I saw fear in his eyes, but instead of taking pity on him, I let the flame grow. He reared back, the flames dancing in his constricting pupils. It was so satisfying to remind one of these overstuffed lords that I was no longer a prisoner who existed for their entertainment. Morella's forced laugh broke the tension, like a fingernail popping a soap bubble.
"Oh, Lady Ruby, you certainly know how to take a joke too far. Put your fire away before you mark up my dress. The seamstress would never forgive me if I ruined her creation only minutes into the ball."
I exhaled slowly, lowering my cooling hand to my side. Lord Prospero regained his equilibrium enough to lift his drink in a shaky salute.
"Enjoy your time here, while it lasts."
And he pointed to himself toward the dessert table. When I turned back to Morella, she regarded me with a speculative expression. "You enjoyed that, didn't you?" I swallowed and shrugged. I had enjoyed threatening him, more than I wanted to admit.
"They will always bait you," she said. "But that doesn't mean you have to swallow the hook so eagerly."
"I don't know why I let him get to me."
"Because," she mused, tapping a finger to her lips, "you're a fox among wolves."
I considered the analogy.
"You'd describe yourself as a wolf."
"Wolves are lovely, agile creatures with killer instincts," she said, a twinkle in her violet eyes. "I don't mind the comparison."
"Well, everyone here thinks I'm the wolf, though sometimes I feel more like a rabbit."
Just then, the hair on the back of my neck lifted. I turned my head to see the same blonde footman staring at me with a strangely intent expression. As I tried to puzzle out where I'd seen him before, he sidled over and spoke to another footman hovering by a group of courtiers. The two then broke off and moved into the crowd, trays of ice wine held aloft. Something about the group of courtiers held my attention, though. They stood too close, heads bent as if to better hear one another whisper, and they kept darting glances around the ballroom.
"A wolf among bears, then," Morella said, drawing my gaze back to her.
"A firebeak among frost beasts, something like that. In any case, you'd be wise not to make more enemies than you need to. Arcus can only protect you so much, and only weeks ago you were still fighting in the arena." As if I needed a reminder of how thoroughly I was hated.
"And you think introducing me as a lady will make any difference to the people who were cheering for my opponents?"
She gave me a scolding look.
"Oh, Ruby, how you get caught up in unimportant details. Everyone else here has a title. It does no good to remind them of all the myriad ways you don't belong. Now just enjoy yourself, would you? Look, it's time for the first dance."
Lord Regia stood on the dais in front of the musicians at the far end of the room and said a few welcoming words.
"And now His Majesty King Aurelius Arcanus will start the dance with a lady of his choosing."
Arcus appeared from the throng, his eyes roving over the crowd before settling on us. He looked devastatingly regal in a midnight blue velvet jacket over a white shirt, though his shoulders were a little too broad for him to ever look truly elegant. Fawn trousers hugged his thighs above high, polished black boots. His dark hair was brushed back, and he wore the silver band on his brow. I glanced at Morella. She held herself with easy poise, but her skin was flushed, and a pulse beat visibly in her neck, a sign of nervousness or excitement. "Of course," I realized with a dip in my stomach. He was coming to ask her for the first dance. She was the official hostess, after all. Dancing with me would only further divide him from his supporters. I stepped back to make room for him to sweep her into his arms. He bowed to her, but extended a hand to me.
"Trying to escape?" he teased,
his eyes like some bleached cobalt as they took leisurely inventory of my appearance. Though his skin radiated cold, his gaze was somewhere between warm and melting.
"I don't fancy your chances of running in that dress."
I glanced at Morella.
"But don't keep them all waiting," she said, smiling widely.
I hadn't known her well. I would have missed the stiffness of her jaw, the tightness of the muscles around her eyes.
Quite right, Lady Mirella.
Arcas tucked my arm into his, steering me to the center of the floor. The music began and he started to move smoothly in time, pulling me along with him. "You might have given me some warning," I muttered, wishing we were alone so I could actually enjoy the feeling of his hand on my waist, the other hand loosely clasping mine. "I don't know how to dance."
"No one can see your feet. Just stay close to me."
He moved with confidence.
I felt as stiff as a wooden doll. "It feels like you're bracing for an attack."
Arcus's breath tickled my ear, his smiling lips brushing my temple.
"This isn't sparring, you know. I'm not going to kick your feet out from under you."
"Good thing, Your Highness," I replied with an eyelash flutter. "Or my dress might fly up around my ears, and wouldn't that be a scandal?" His lips twitched, the scar pulling taut in that way I found endlessly endearing.
"And then there's the matter of me having to duel with anyone who dared to stare at you. Which would be every man here."
"They'd only stare because they're afraid of me. They're all waiting for me to melt something."
"Ah, but Lady Ruby, you already have," he said, letting go of my waist to spin me in a quick circle.
As I came back around, his hand returned to steady me.
"You've melted my icy heart."
I laughed, surprised at both the sudden spin and the remark. The glittering candles, the scent of freshly cut roses in crystal vases, and Arcus's cool breath on my cheek as he said sweet things in my ear, all made me feel giddier than usual. Warmth stole into my limbs, and I let myself relax into the rhythm, forward and back and turning, my dress billowing out behind me. "I didn't know you liked this sort of thing," I said a little breathlessly. "Dancing and ballrooms?"
"Neither did I."
His tone matched the heat in his gaze, while his hand at my waist moved to my back to press me closer. His firm touch and the dazzling light in his eyes sent sparks up my spine. "If you keep raising my temperature, I'm going to melt your chandeliers," I warned.
"I shall just make new ones."
He wiggled his fingers toward the ceiling as if conjuring ice. Despite the disapproving stares, I realized I was actually enjoying myself. If the king wanted to dance with me instead of Mirella or some other Frostblood lady, his court would just have to accept it. After all, they couldn't control how he felt about me, or how I felt about him. I let myself bask in the appreciative heat of his gaze, imagining how I could slide my palm up to cover the ridged skin of his cheek, then trail my fingers over his perfectly sculpted lips with their tempting imperfection. What would the court do if I had the temerity to kiss the king in front of all of them?
The ladies would all faint, no doubt.
I wasn't sure I cared.
"If you keep looking at me like that,"
he said in a low rumble that sent shivers over my skin, "perhaps I'll melt the chandeliers." I shook my head slightly to clear the image of our fused lips. That'd be a story for the history books. He laughed. Our eyes met and clung. As we executed a perfect turn, for a second I was flying.
The spell was broken as Lord Regia invited everyone to join the dance.
As couples filled the space, I had to focus on keeping up with Arcus's steps without colliding with anyone else. "Any word from the Sudesian Queen?" I asked hopefully, for perhaps the 100th time since he'd announced the ball. Something flitted across his expression. Disappointment, maybe. Or regret.
"You're hoping she'll show up at the last minute?" "It's unlikely."
I nodded, feeling foolish.
"I'm sorry,"
Arcus said in a low voice. "It's not your fault," I said brightly, resurrecting my smile. "You invited her, and that's what counts." He nodded and pulled me a little bit closer. A minute later, Mirella and her dance partner came alongside us. "I hate to be a nuisance," she said with a charming half-smile, "but I do believe I've earned a dance with the king. I did work myself to exhaustion organizing this gala, after all."
My dear lady, Arcas replied with amused tolerance. If you are exhausted, dancing will hardly help.
But, my dear king, I live to dance. Or have you forgotten?
I blinked at her coquettish tone, my chest clenching with jealousy. Mirella winked at me and leaned close to whisper.
I need an excuse to get away from Lord Trilby. His hands are like sparrows in winter. They keep migrating south.
My jealousy faded. I didn't blame her for wanting to escape. And luckily, when we went to change partners, the young noble blanched and claimed to need refreshment. Arcas was already laughing at something Mirella had said as I steered myself toward the dessert table. I selected a powdery, bite-sized cake and popped it into my mouth. Custard filling exploded against my tongue. This wouldn't be a bad way to spend the rest of the ball, I decided, choosing several more sugary confections to sample. The Frost Court certainly adores its sweets, said a low, mocking voice with a slight accent. And you are clearly no exception. I turned and found my gaze ensnared by a pair of golden brown eyes. The young man's face was sharply cut, his cheekbones high, his chin on the stubborn side. His expression was arrogant, but it was the colour of his hair that made me stare. The wavy locks were a strange mix of light brown, auburn, gold and ginger, as if each strand had been painted a slightly different hue by an indecisive hand. He was dressed in form-fitting trousers and a simple grey tunic, but the silver embroidery on the edges was of the finest quality. He regarded me with a level gaze. I realized I must be covered with powdered sugar. Heat covered my skin. Your statement tells me two things, I said, trying to sound composed as I surreptitiously dusted my fingers together, creating a little winter scene with the fall of snowy sugar. One, you're not from the Frost Court. The court never analyzes or questions itself. It just is. Astute. The Frost Court perceives itself as the pinnacle of taste and civilization. But the way you say that makes me think you are not part of it either. A few minutes ago, I had taken Mirella to task for calling me a lady. Suddenly, I didn't want to admit to this stranger that I didn't belong. Two, I counted, ignoring his observation. You don't like sweets. His lips quirked. Now, that is a leap of logic. Simply observing that others like sweets doesn't mean I don't like them myself. It's implied, I answered. If you liked them, you'd simply select one and eat it. Like you've been doing, little bird.
I blinked up at him, trying to decide whether to address the fact that he'd been rude enough to point out that I was about to gorge on cakes, or the unsanctioned use of a nickname. Before I could decide, he spoke again.
Perhaps I have a weakness for a certain variety of sweet.
He moved infinitesimally closer. The kind that's not found on a dessert table. The air suddenly felt trapped in my chest. Was he flirting with me? No one flirted with me. The court hated me. But then, he wasn't from this court. Who are you? The tension at the edges of his lips spoke of suppressed amusement.
You've deduced that I'm neither a member of this court nor a lover of cake. Why not guess my identity as well?
I examined him carefully, taking in his confidence, his air of entitlement, his easy grace. He had an accent, but the noble speech was still clear. Perhaps he was the Saffron Ambassador, whose coveted signature on the peace accords could reopen trade to the east. But no, the Saffron's dressed in robes, not breeches. You're from the south, I said. An easy guess. Since most everything was south of the capital.
Vague, he replied, but accurate.
Fine then, I'll be specific. His clothing was a recognizable style, making it likely he lived in Tempesia. And he'd agreed he was from the south. The farthest south within the kingdom was the Aris Plains, which left only one option. You're the dignitary of the southern provinces. Though you're rather young for that, aren't you? Not much older than me, I'd say. Perhaps you're the son or younger brother of the dignitary. His smile grew.
"Oh, little bird," he said smoothly. "I'm second to no one." I huffed at his arrogance. "So you are the dignitary." He inclined his head.
"Arcas was afraid he wouldn't come. I'd been so fixated on the Friar Blood Queen, I'd forgotten to ask if the dignitary had replied to the invitation. So this was the elected leader of the southern provinces, the group of people who wanted self-governance within the kingdom. It was so brave of him to show up. Some of the court would probably hang him for treason if they could." His brows rose, and I realized I'd used the nickname Arcas instead of King Arcanus.
"A last-minute decision," he replied. "Who could resist a glimpse of the king's famous Fireblood champion?"
"I'm not his champion."
"Don't waste your time on false modesty, little bird. You were the first Fireblood to win in the king's arena. A story to inspire bards and troubadours. The Fireblood peasant girl, hidden away in a mountain village until her mother's death drove her to revenge. Destroyer of thrones, killer of kings. And somehow, instead of facing execution for these crimes, she won the affection of the new Frost King and resides comfortably in his castle. I won't make you blush by repeating the reasons they say he keeps you so close, even if I can see quite clearly why those rumours are likely to be true. Your neck is far too lovely to be split in half." He smiled as he watched my reaction. I struggled against a rush of angry heat, and he held up his palms.
"Don't blame me, Lady Ruby. I only repeat what I hear. You're a legend, though perhaps more hated than admired in this court."
Normally, I'd have told him what he could do with his thoughts on my so-called legendary status and my place in the court. But I didn't want to do anything that would ruin Arcas's chance for gaining a signature in his treaty. I swallowed my angry retort and scanned the room for an escape.
"It's rather stuffy in here," I said, aiming for a tone that conveyed regretful but firm dismissal. "I think I'll take a stroll in the garden, if you excuse me."
"I'll accompany you," he said smoothly. Annoyance flared, which for some reason made him grin. "Hoping to escape me, were you? As I came all this way to speak to you, it would be rude of you to ignore me. After all, your king is hoping your presence here aids his campaign to unite his broken kingdom."
"I wouldn't call the kingdom broken, and even if it were, I wouldn't be the one to unite it." A twitch of his eyebrow gave the impression of disbelief.
"It's a sound strategy, using your friendship to convince his detractors that he's different from his brother. If his companion is a Fireblood, he can't be all bad. Isn't that the current propaganda being churned out by the Frost Court?"
"It's not propaganda, and he doesn't need me to convince people of that.
On the contrary, you're the reason I'm here, and perhaps the Saffrons would say the same. You'd make a far more effective ambassador than the imbeciles the king appoints to speak for him."
"He has to work within the confines of the court," I said, offended at the implication that Arcas chose his representatives poorly. "Why am I defending him to you? Go speak to him yourself if you're so sceptical, and leave me in peace." He laughed.
"Perhaps you're no ambassador after all. No dignitary can afford to trample on diplomacy with such abandon. But surely you've been instructed to help mend ties within the southern provinces?"
"Arcas had said my presence here would help. He needed the peace treaty signed if he was to bring his troops home to their fields and villages. If I could help him do that, I should swallow my pride and keep my temper."
"I would be pleased to have you accompany me," I said with a sigh.
"Ah, now see? That wasn't so bad."
As we turned toward the doors leading outside, someone sniffed loudly behind us. I turned and found myself face to face with a fox. A white frost fox pelt curled around the shoulders of a noblewoman.
"How fitting," said Lady Blanding, somehow managing to look down her nose at me even though we were about the same height. "The Fireblood peasant and the illiterate provincial, cozy as two rats in a barrel. This day a rodent will always manage to find more of its own kind."
"Madam," said the dignitary,
"the only rodent I see is above your shoulders."
"This is no rodent," she retorted, smoothing the white fur with bejeweled fingers, her voice high with outrage. My stole was made from a pure white frost fox, a gift from my husband before the species was hunted nearly to extinction.
I wasn't referring to the fox, he replied, each word enunciated, his gaze steady. When she finally took his meaning, her eyes turned to steel.
My husband and I are powerful people, she said, her voice as frigid as the pillars. If I thought you deserved it, I might have argued for your salvation. As it is, I leave you to your fate.
With a final outraged glance, Lady Blanding whirled and stomped away, her grey hair wobbling like a tower of curdled whipped cream. The back of her head sported a comb in the shape of a fox head, its diamond eyes staring lifelessly at me.
Is that typical of your interactions with the Frost Court? The dignitary asked.
Pretty much, I answered, still smiling at the look on Lady Blanding's face when she'd realized she was being insulted. I've never enjoyed it quite so much, though.
I believe we were going to get some air.
At my nod, he started to reach for my arm, but checked the movement.
Instead, he motioned outside. When we had crossed the threshold, the footman shut the doors sharply behind us. He chuckled.
I find it amusing that they keep the doors closed. Are they worried about letting in a draught?
I stared. That is strange, actually.
We shouldn't squander such a thoughtful gift, he said silkily. What should we do with all this newfound privacy?
Instead of answering, I strode purposefully down the path into the ice garden, my slippers crunching over the gravel, my skirts rustling like autumn leaves. The air altered as we moved farther from the ballroom, cooling and crisping. The scent of expensive perfumes replaced by pungent hints of pine, oil from hanging lamps, and the minty breath of drowsing pennyroyal. I inhaled deeply, enjoying the chill but also using my gift to push out a layer of heat beneath my thin gown.
I don't know what you think we're doing out here,
I said as the dignitary ambled alongside me. But I'm here to talk about you signing the peace treaty.
And yet you're all alone, he said, as if he thought me too innocent to appreciate the possible danger. What would stop me from deciding I didn't want to talk at all?
My fire would stop you, I said seriously, halting and turning to him. And I wouldn't hesitate to use it. He made an amused sound.
I'm afraid that isn't as intimidating as you'd like it to be, Lady Ruby. Not with me.
You're not a Frostblood.
Definitely not.
Then you should be intimidated. The edge of his mouth tensed, as if he fought a smile.
Because your Arcus will have me dealt with if you ask him to?
I angled my chin up. If anyone can heal the wounds opened by his brother, Arcus can. And yes, I call him Arcus because that's how I first knew him, well before he became king. His sense of humour runs deep, and he has never let me down. You can trust him.
You truly believe what you're saying, don't you? He asked with a hint of wonder.
And perhaps pity. Of course I do. And so should you. The sooner the peace accords are signed, the sooner we can begin healing Tempesia.
And where do you fit into this healing?
I shrugged. Doing whatever I can, I suppose.
But what do you want? What do you want for yourself?
The question was strangely intense. I hesitated. I could have kept my distance with some vague answer. But I sensed it was a serious question, that he was still deciding whether to trust me, and by extension, trust Arcus. The trouble was, I didn't really know what I wanted. When I tried to picture my future, my mind clouded, as if I were looking at a glass ball filled with smoke. I needed to destroy the Minax, to stop the visions and get my mind back again. But I couldn't tell him that. So I told him a different truth. I want the kind of peace we had before King Akur, when trade was opened between provinces, between kingdoms, with Sudesia, where my mother came from. Something flared in his eyes. Bright and fierce.
Do you truly believe that's achievable in your lifetime?
Don't you?
He wore an enigmatic smile.
I commend you for dreaming big. By all means, said a voice from somewhere in the darkness of the garden. Let the fools dream of peace. I, for one, would prefer to make our enemies pay.
Chapter 4 Three lanterns went out, one after the other, leaving only the nearest one casting a small circle of light around a shadowy figure. It was the footman I'd seen staring at me earlier.
We had all kinds of elaborate plans to isolate you, fire filth, he said. And then you wander out here.
He turned a menacing look on the dignitary.
We didn't expect you tonight, but we'll take the good fortune bestowed by fours.
Though the dignitary hadn't changed position, tension radiated from him.
The god of the North Wind has nothing to do with my presence here.
Who are you? I asked the blond man. His grin widened.
I've been told I bear a resemblance to my brother. Surely you haven't forgotten him.
In the space of a breath, it all snapped into place. The sandy blonde hair, the familiar, arrogant grin. I would never forget the man he resembled, and the man who'd killed my mother. You're Captain Drake's brother.
Oh, so the lady does remember. And do you also recall his wife and daughter, watching from the crowd, sobbing their eyes out as you took my brother's life in the arena?
I swallowed. I do.
Not that you care, but Ilva died within a week of her husband. They say it was a fever, but I know the truth. Grief killed her. And then my poor orphan niece sent me a message that my brother's killer was being treated as a lady and living in the castle.
Fortunately, there's a sizable group of people who want to get rid of you.
I only had to join their ranks and wait for an opportunity.
In seconds, we were surrounded by half a dozen masked figures holding swords. Two of them held up hands coated in frost. Run, I whispered. I'll hold them off. My companion scoffed.
I was about to say the same thing to you.
I threw him a glance from the corner of my eye. The peace talks depend on you. Go.
I'm not here to sign any treaties. Shall we then?
The dignitary raised his palms and, in a gesture that held me immobile with stupefied shock, sent twin streams of vivid orange flames toward the sculptures and trees and shrubs made of ice, sweeping back and forth in a searing arc that sent our attackers shouting and stumbling and running for cover. The ice melted into a rushing stream that flowed onto the gravel path, sloshing over my toes and into my thin slippers. I continued to stare at the dignitary, the fire blood, only the crash of my heart assuring me I hadn't actually turned to stone.
Don't worry, he said to Drake. That was just a little stretch. I have plenty left.
He beckoned them forward with a bend of his fingers.
Where the blazes did you come from? Drake snarled. There are no firebloods left in Tempesia, aside from her. My brother made sure of that. I'd stake my life on it.
I was almost tempted to thank him for asking. I was wondering the same thing. The fireblood laughed.
A foolish bet, since it's obvious you've already lost. Now I'll gladly collect your forfeit.
Cupping his hands together, he slowly pulled them apart to create a dense ball of flame that grew in size and intensity. Most of the attackers turned and ran, their boots sliding on the wet ground. Only the two frostbloods remained with Drake, all three of them lifting their palms towards us in readiness.
My brother didn't have the gift, said Drake, but I do. Finally, it's a fair fight.
Hardly fair when you outnumber us 3-2, I pointed out, my voice unsteady. I still couldn't believe I was standing next to another fireblood. Be amazed later, fight now. Drake shrugged.
I was never very good at arithmetic.
He yelled an order, and a low, protective wall of frost formed. Then a blast of ice slammed towards us. My hands were ready, but the attack still knocked me off my feet. The dignitary, or whoever he was, managed to remain standing. Drake was right. A fireblood of his caliber would never have escaped Rasmus's notice. Who are you, really? I asked, pushing to my feet.
My name is Kai, he answered.
That's not what I... Another wave of frost knocked us back, turning to smoke and steam as it met our fire.
Form a shield, Kai said, demonstrating by making a swirling lozenge of fire that grew in size.
Hold it steady, with me.
I watched and mirrored him. When the two masses of flames combined, light blinded me. I felt my way through the move, forcing the fire into an ever larger oval.
Stand your ground, he told me. Now push forward on my mark. Hold, hold, now!
We slammed the pulsing fire shield ahead in unison and heard surprised shouts as we broke through their icy wall and the thuds of bodies as they hit the earth. As my vision cleared, I saw figures on the ground, unmoving. I sucked in a breath and stepped toward them.
Leave them, said Kai, grabbing my arm.
I shook free and ran the rest of the way to the attackers, pulling off the first Frostblood's mask. It was Lord Regia. He wasn't breathing. I found no pulse at his throat. The other mask revealed his wife, Lady Regia.
Oh, Tempus, I said. They're from Arcus's council. He'll be devastated.
I took her wrist, feeling a faint pulse. Kai shouted a warning and ran toward me, but he halted abruptly at the same moment the sharp edge of a steel blade bit into the skin at my throat.
Stand slowly, Drake ordered from close behind me.
I did as he asked, barely breathing as his other arm cinched tight around my waist.
You kill her, I kill you, said Kai. Very simple. Let her go. I swore to Fors that she would die today, and I've never broken an oath. Now you, on the other hand, the Blue Legion wanted you dead for daring to come here. But if you leave without signing the treaty, they might let you live.
Well, normally I would be only too willing to save my own precious skin, said Kai with alarming calm, alarming to me at least, since I was fairly sure I couldn't summon my heat without Drake slicing me first.
But it happens that there's something I want rather badly, and it hinges on keeping this girl alive.
He spread his hands in an apologetic gesture.
So, I'm afraid I'll have to ask you again to let her go.
Drake shook his head, the motion making the knife saw gently back and forth against my neck. I didn't dare bat an eyelash at the sting.
You can do your best to kill me once she's dead, Drake said. But an oath is an oath. She dies now.
His lips touched my ear as he whispered, This is for my brother, Firefilth. His arm tensed, and for a second I thought the last word I ever heard would be Firefilth, and the last thing I ever saw would be a very annoyed-looking Fireblood with hair that refused to be anything but vivid orange, even in the dim light of a nighttime garden. But then the vivid orange spread and lit the sky in a whip of flame that curled above and behind me. And the tension in Drake's arm became a tremble in the rest of his body. He fought back, his chest coating with frost as he tried to ward off the fire, but the heat intensified and he screamed. And then my hands, which had been pressed against his arm, suddenly found they had pushed free, and I was stumbling forward onto my hands and knees, getting thoroughly soaked in an icy pool of water. I stayed there, just trying to catch my breath. I'd been about to die, and then I hadn't. Fire had saved me, and it hadn't been my own. I finally looked up to see Kai shaking his head, no longer just annoyed but properly furious.
And how long do you think I can stay here now that I've killed a Frostblood, hm? They'll be out looking for me in droves.
He spat a few words in what I could have sworn was Sudesian. From the tone, I was pretty sure he was cursing.
I was just nearly killed, I pointed out shakily, rubbing my throat, and you're angry that I've spoiled your visit.
He made a furious gesture towards Drake's body.
This didn't go at all the way it was supposed to. I didn't know you had assassins trailing at your heels.
He punctuated his thoughts with a few more foreign words. If anything, they sounded angrier and filthier than the previous curses.
Well, I'm so sorry my attempted murder inconvenienced you.
I struggled to stand and slipped back down onto one knee. Rather than helping me up, he pulled at his cuffs and brushed dirt from his tunic, as if fixing his appearance even mattered right now.
If you don't want to be inconvenienced further, I suggest you leave before anyone comes. The King's Guards might have a few questions about how the southern dignitary happens to be a Fireblood, considering they thought I was the only one left in Tempesia. He gave me a pitying look.
I'm clearly not the southern dignitary, though the disguise was rather amusing, I admit.
Who then?
I gave you my real name.
He took my upper arms and hauled me to my feet.
But I'm not from the Aris Plains.
I'm from Sudesia. My body went rigid. His eyes sparkled.
Yes, we have ships, you know.
But the blockade?
The provinces are still friendly to us and find ways for our ships to pass through. Not often, mind you. But enough that we heard tales, even before we received your king's invitation, of the Fireblood girl who destroyed the Frost Throne. I had come here to...
He paused and shook his head in frustration.
Never mind that. All my plans are in tatters, but I can still help you. Consider this your formal invitation. Come to Sudesia with me.
I tried to remember how to exhale. That was about the last thing I'd expected him to say. Why would I go anywhere with you?
Let me spell it out, then. They don't like you here. They tried to kill you once, and they will try again. I'm offering safety, freedom. Not to mention knowledge and training that you're sorely lacking. Your mastery of your gift is on par with my 6-year-old niece. A Fireblood school could do wonders for you.
If you think insulting me will...
More important, he interrupted. You mentioned that you want to see peace and harmony in this godforsaken iceberg of a kingdom. Let me assure you, the emissary of the Aris Plains will never sign any treaties unless my queen sanctions it. The province's ties with Sudesia go back centuries. If you come to Sudesia, perhaps you can propose some kind of agreement.
In spite of myself, I was intrigued, though I had no time or space to weigh the odds that he was telling the truth. Why are you offering this? A gust of wind made the few remaining ice trees shiver and chime. He grabbed my hand. The shock of his skin. The first person I'd known whose temperature matched mine. I was only numbly aware as he slid a ring onto my finger.
Think of this as a ticket onto my ship. Meet me at the port in Tevros within the week. You could hold the key to peace in these soft little hands.
He caressed my palm with his thumb, then grinned unrepentantly as I yanked it away.
Forgive me, but I don't care to wait around to be questioned by the king's soldiers. You'll find me in a tavern called the Fat Badger near the Wolf. If you don't show up, I'll assume you prefer assassination to my offer.
Then he dashed towards the perimeter of the garden, climbed a tree, and hopped as nimbly as a jackrabbit over the wall. I wasted a few seconds staring after the Fireblood stranger, then realized how incriminating it would look if I were discovered with 3 injured or dead Frostbloods. I took my skirts in hand and splashed through the melted remains of ice flowers. How was I going to explain what happened? Would anyone believe me? If the court was looking for a way to show that I was a threat, I had practically gift-wrapped myself for them. When I neared the door to the ballroom, muffled screams came from inside. I forgot everything but the need to make sure Arcus was safe. I grabbed the handle and yanked. Locked. I moved to the right, where light spilled through one of the windows, and saw chaos. Gone was the civilized mingling of Frostblood nobility with foreign ambassadors, the tilts of heads and the flutter of fans and the waltzing flare of skirts. In their place was well-dressed warfare, the heft of steel and the blast of frost wielded with animalistic ferocity. The combatants wearing ball gowns and brushed velvet instead of armor. Frostblood against Frostblood. My eyes roved frantically, searching for Arcus. I couldn't find him. I threw myself against the window, but it held firm. I searched the ground and, in a few seconds, found a large enough rock to hurl at the glass, which exploded as it shattered. I used another rock to clear the jagged bits at the base, then slid through, only half aware of a stray piece slicing my palm. I scanned the scene. Some of the guests were at the doors, pulling desperately on the handles and calling for help. Others were slumped on the floor, unconscious or dead. For a second, I wondered if Kai had been complicit in what was clearly a coordinated attack, then dismissed the idea instantly. He'd fought the attackers off with me.
I finally spotted Arcas, standing on the edge of the dais where the musicians had played a waltz only half an hour before. Lord Pell fought alongside him, but they were outnumbered by 4 other Frostbloods, 2 men and 2 women, all of them dressed as servants or guards. I rushed forward and blasted an attacker in the back, who screamed and went down, his black doublet in flames. As the others turned and threw out their hands, my second blast of flame meeting their frost, my eyes cut to Arcas. Even outnumbered, it was strange that he hadn't won this fight. His gift was spectacular. But then I realized one of his hands was pressed to his chest near his shoulder. His face was paler than usual, his expression pinched with pain. Blue blood seeped between his fingers. He'd been stabbed. I saw red. Rage boiled my blood, lending me strength to bring down another of his attackers. Then Arcas shouted a warning, his gaze fixed behind me. I whirled. 3 Frostbloods dressed as servants converged on me, 2 throwing frost and 1 wielding a sword. I heard Arcas call my name, but I was too busy dodging the sword and throwing flame at the attacker's feet, forcing him back. As I twisted to avoid a stream of frost from the side, ice caught me from behind, sending me to the ground. "Kill the king and his fireblood harlot and rise, Blue Legion, rise!" the swordsman snarled. Shock at his words held me immobile for a fraction of a second, but it was long enough to lose the opportunity to use my fire. I rolled out of the way as his sword tip crashed against the floor. I found my feet, only to be grabbed from behind. But an elbow and a fist soon dislodged the hold. A few seconds were spent in intense concentration as I threw out fire to keep the attackers, at least 6 now, from getting close. But there were too many, and I was grabbed on either side, no matter that my sleeves were on fire from my own flame. A sword rose over my head and clattered to the ballroom floor. The servant's blue eyes blinked in shock, blue blood sliding from both nostrils as he crumpled. Lord Pell, standing behind the man, yanked his blade from the body. My other attackers were completely immobile, as if someone had stopped time. I glanced at the 2 Frostbloods holding me, a man and a woman, both encased in ice, their hands frozen around my arms. The fire on my sleeves was out, my dress in blackened tatters at the edges. My head jerked up to check on Arcas. He stood on the dais, his hands thrust out. He had frozen my attackers in a single burst of frost. There was murder in his eyes, and for a fraction of a second, I saw his brother in him. The rage and hatred, the thirst for death. As if the Minax preyed on him now, twisting his fears and hurts and dusting away his pain to make him into someone who was incapable of mercy. I honed in on Arcas's eyes, half expecting them to be pure, shining onyx, but they were still blue. He blinked, his eyes focusing on me. He mouthed my name, and then he swayed, his eyelashes fluttering. I pushed out heat into my arms, broke free of the ice, and ran to him, stepping over bodies along the way. I reached my arms up and caught him as he fell, giving a surprised oof as I was crushed under his muscular bulk. "Arcas," I groaned. How ironic to survive the fight, only to be flattened under the unforgiving weight of the person who had saved my life. A hysterical giggle bubbled up but came out as a strangled gasp. The laughter fled as I realized he wasn't moving. "No," I whispered, struggling to free myself. Hands slid around Arcas's arms, and for a second I panicked, expecting more enemies. But it was Lord Pell and Lord Manus, both of them bloody and stern-faced, gently pulling Arcas to his feet and holding him between them. I sucked in a relieved breath and stood, moving my hands to Arcas's cheeks. "Wake up, please. Arcas, please." My words were whispered prayers, frantic and raw in my burning throat. His eyelashes fluttered open. "Thank Fors you're all right," he mumbled, his mouth twitching up at the corner. I turned to Lord Pell, drawing myself up. "He needs a healer, now!" Arcas laughed weakly.
"You give orders like a queen."
His eyes slid over me as Lord Pell and Lord Manus moved toward the ballroom doors, which now stood open.
"You are unhurt?"
Arcas slurred as I followed him toward the exit. I scanned for Morella and Brother Thistle, relieved that neither were among the prone forms on the floor. I'm fine.
I got blood all over your gown,
Ucker said rather irrelevantly. It doesn't matter. I noticed a bearded man in robes who must be the Saffron Ambassador, alive and unharmed, talking with a few other delegates. Thanks, Sood. His murder would have meant war.
If my blood were red like yours, it would match your dress, Arcus rambled. You should have worn blue.
Oh, stop spinning, I don't want to dance.
I looked at him sharply, then met Lord Manus's eyes. He's delirious.
Couldn't find you,
Arcus muttered, his eyes closing.
Worried.
Lord Pell chuckled, though I heard the tension in his voice. The king nearly lost his mind when he couldn't find you during the attack, Lady Ruby. I fought alongside him in battle, and I've never seen him so close to wetting his pants.
Quiet, Oliver, Arcus murmured.
You were outside? Lord Pell asked me as we reached the doorway. I told a brief version of events about Lord and Lady Regia, Drake and his revenge, and what he'd said about the Blue Legion.
You fought them all off by yourself? Lord Manus asked.
The guards crowded around us now, offering help. I wasn't about to say anything about Kai. There were too many people here. The king needs to be in bed. A crooked smile spread over Arcus's face, and his eyelids fluttered open.
Why, Ruby? I didn't know you were so eager to get me into bed. Wish I'd known sooner.
Lord Manus's cheeks darkened with the blue-tinged frostblood version of a blush. I was sure my complexion was thoroughly pink. Come now, friend, said Lord Pell, motioning the guards to help carry their king, before you give the guards far too much to talk about. Arcus muttered something barely audible and stumbled, but the steady hands of his men were there to carry him. I had never seen him look so weak.
What a night, said Lord Pell as we moved into the hallway toward the stairs. The glorious dawn of our peace talks has ended in attempts on our lives.
The dignitary from the Aris Plains, Lord Manus exclaimed, as if just remembering. I couldn't find him. He was with me in the garden, I said now that we had more privacy, although I couldn't quite bring myself to admit that he wasn't the dignitary at all. He ran off during the attack.
Well, we'll have to find him and grovel on our knees for all this. Thank Forth he wasn't killed. The assassins seem to be targeting delegates, particularly the ones who've shown a willingness to sign the peace treaties, which is probably why Arcus threw himself in front of the dagger meant for the Saffron Ambassador.
Typical. He's calm and focused when defending himself, but he's a fiend when he's protecting someone else.
He's going to be all right, isn't he?
The healers will tell us more shortly. Though it probably didn't do much good when he yanked out the blade so we could search for you. I groaned.
I'm going to kill him.
And then I'm going to find out the names of every man and woman who had a hand in this attack, and there were so many things I'd like to do, and they all involved my fire. Express my extreme displeasure. Manus chuckled.
Leave that to me. Your job is to go make him rest, since I doubt anyone else could.
Chapter 5 I sat on one side of Arcus's bed, and Brother Thistle sat on the other. A fire had been lit, though somehow the heat didn't penetrate the massive space. Plush, royal blue curtains covered wide windows that looked down on the castle courtyard. All the luxuries of the king's bedchamber. Carved wardrobes, thick rugs, wing-back chairs with delicately curved legs, were painted a soft yellow by the glow from candelabras. I watched helplessly as the healers, a man and woman with similarly long, serious faces, checked the king's pulse and washed and dressed his wound. It was deathly quiet after they left. Arcus lay in the bed, silent and still, his skin almost as bleached as the sheets, the covers pulled over his bare chest up to his bandaged shoulder. When I touched his cheek, he was frighteningly cold, even for him.
"Will he recover?" I asked, as if the monk, with all his scholarly knowledge, would know the answer to that question too.
He must.
Brother Thistle's expression was openly worried as he stared at Arcas. He loved him like a son, that was clear.
Surely we would make Arcas better with the force of our affection alone.